We come today to a time in Abraham's life which can only be described as a blot upon his judgment. It's that time when he made a decision to take Hagar, the maid of his wife Sarah, into marriage union and thus form a polygamous marriage. It was a union which not only brought sorrow to his own heart, but which would affect his family for generations to come, indeed, right down to this very present day. The entire episode reveals failings on the part of all three people involved. And among other things, it sends a very clear message, a clear warning against the practice of polygamy. God intended man to be married to only one wife at one time. And that's very clearly manifested here by the adverse circumstances that followed the breaking of God's order. Any man who contemplates having more than one wife at the same time should first of all read the 16th chapter of the book of Genesis before embarking upon such a course of action. We should never reason that because something is mentioned in the Bible, that its mere mention is the justification of it. God's permission of a practice is not to be equated with his approval of it. And just because the Lord permitted this, and just because it's mentioned in the Bible, does not mean that the Lord approved of it. In Abraham's case, his polygamy is recorded as a caution and as a warning. The Lord is saying here, don't go down this route. The Lord is saying one wife is enough. And there are some men who would go as far to say, I do not say who they are, but they would go as far to say that one wife is more than enough. And if you read Genesis chapter 16, you will find the evidence for that. This, I'm sure, in the aftermath of what happened, I'm sure Abraham had wished that he had never embarked upon such a course. But the Bible tells us here that he took Hagar to be his wife. This was a polygamous marriage. He was already married, and he took Hagar as his wife. But there's failings here on the part of all three persons who are recorded. And I want to look at the three persons. That's the way I want us to consider this chapter. I want to look at Abraham, and then Sarah, and then Hagar, because the Lord brings them each to our attention, and he has something, I believe, in the case of each to say to us. In the first place, I want you to notice this action of Abraham. The passage, of course, begins with the approach of Sarah to her husband regarding her barrenness, her childless state, and she prevails upon him to take Hagar, her maid, as his wife, so that offspring could be raised. This was the intention. She says in verse 2, Behold, now the Lord hath restrained me from bearing. I pray thee, go in unto my maid. It may be that I may obtain children by her. In effect, she's proposing Hagar as a surrogate mother. She's wanting children, a child, offspring to be raised, but it hasn't happened in her case, and so she begins to reason and think to herself that the only way to bring this about is through surrogacy. Abraham must take Hagar as his wife, and through that method, then a child will be born. Now, although the suggestion was Sarah's, Abraham acted upon it, and that is something that's brought very clearly to our attention in the latter part of verse 2. Look at the last sentence. And Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarah. Abram hearkened. He listened and he acted upon the suggestion of his wife Sarah. And in doing so, he was acting contrary to the voice of God. You remember in the previous chapter, the Lord had spoken to Abraham regarding his offspring. Abraham was thinking about God's promise, the promise of a seed, promise of a son. And he was beginning to think that it could only come about by adopting the son of Eliezer and raising up an heir that way. And God said, "This shall not be thine heir, but one that is born out of thine own loins, one who would be born biologically. A natural son Abraham would have." This was God's way. This was God's method. And God had made it clear to Abraham what he was going to do and how he was going to bring about the fulfillment of his promise. But now, following on from that, Abraham and his wife begin to reason that the promise of God could only be fulfilled through surrogacy and the taking of a second wife. But of course, this was contrary to the will of God and to the mind of God. When you begin to look at the way they were reasoning, you can discover a number of things that were lacking in their hearts. And surely we could say this morning there was a lack of faith in their hearts, a lack of faith to believe that God could actually cause Sarah to bear a child. Sarah herself had recognized and borne testimony that life was a gift of God. But she saw that in a negative way. She says in verse 2, "Behold, now the Lord hath restrained me from bearing." That's an indication that life came from God. Life is a gift of God. And she's recognizing that, but you see how she sees it in a negative way? The Lord has restrained me. He's kept me back from bearing a child. But there's an evidence there of a lack of faith, a weakness in her faith. Could the Lord not have caused her to bear a child if he so desired? If it was the Lord's will, if it was the Lord's purpose, could the Lord not have opened up Sarah's womb and caused her to bring forth a son naturally, biologically? Of course he could have. There's nothing too hard for the Lord. But here we see in this reasoning a lack of faith. A lack of faith in God and in God's ability and in God's power. Yes, there is a recognition that life comes from Him, but there's a stumbling block there in their thinking because the Lord cannot do this in the case of Sarah. But not only was there a lack of faith, a weakness in faith, but there was a lack of patience. They were becoming impatient with waiting for the promise of God to be fulfilled. They wanted God's promise fulfilled in their time, not in God's time. They hadn't reached God's time yet. God's time would be another 13, 14 years from this moment when Isaac would be born. But they were getting impatient, and isn't it very often the case in the Christian life that we become impatient? We want God to act in our time instead of God's time. Impatience can breed much sorrow and much grief in our hearts and in our lives, as it did here in this case. There's not only a lack of faith and a lack of patience, but there was a lack of prayer. When Sarah brought this suggestion to Abraham, he immediately hearkened to the voice of his wife. There's no mention here of taking time to seek the Lord. There's no mention of taking time to wait on God and to find out what God's mind and what God's will is about this particular suggestion, this particular course of action that was being suggested. He acted upon the voice of his wife and not the voice of his God. Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarah. There was a lack of prayer, a lack of waiting upon God. And what followed is a reminder to all of us of the bitter consequences that inevitably come when we do not listen or wait for the voice of the Lord, for the counsel of the Lord. His failure to wait upon the Lord brought pain to himself. There was great resentment between Sarah and Hagar. There was bitterness there and all the trouble that followed from that. And then as you read on in the life story of Abraham, you'll discover that in Genesis 21, chapter 21 and verse 9, when Isaac, the promised seed, was eventually born, that he became the subject of persecution at the hand of Ishmael, the son of Hagar. Verse 9 of chapter 21, and Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, which she had borne unto Abraham, mocking Isaac, that is. If you turn over to Galatians, in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul comments upon that incident. Galatians chapter 4 it is, and the verse 29. You see the background there in verse 28. Now we, brethren, as Isaac was, are the children of promise. But as then he that was born after the flesh, that is Ishmael, persecuted him that was born after the Spirit, even so it is now. He's talking about that time when Ishmael mocked Isaac, when Ishmael persecuted Isaac. So what Abraham did here brought not only affliction to himself within his family setting, but it brought affliction to the promised seed, to Isaac in later years. And indeed that hostility and that enmity has carried on down through the family line of Isaac and Ishmael. The people that have descended from Ishmael have been a thorn in the flesh to the people of Israel, all down through the generations. And it all stems back to that time when Abraham did not take time to seek the Lord, to wait on God and to find God's mind, but instead he hearkened to the voice of his wife. And surely the lesson here, when we look at Abraham in this incident, the lesson is that we must always take time to seek the mind of God. When we're faced with situations in life and with decisions and with suggestions and proposals, it will never be a vain thing to take time to wait on God and obtain God's mind. Because we may listen to the voice of others, and well-meaning they may be, and as close as they may be to us, their voice, their counsel, their suggestion may be a suggestion that will in the end only bring grief and affliction to our hearts. I believe the Lord has put this into this particular chapter for our benefit, that we might learn from the action of Abraham. He did not take time to wait on God. And we need to take time to wait on the Lord and to seek the mind of God. But then notice secondly here, Sarah, the suggestion of Sarah. Abraham's action in taking Hagar as his wife was first suggested and prompted by Sarah. And that's a fact that made it all the more difficult to resist. This didn't come from a stranger, and it certainly did not come from an enemy. It didn't come from somebody who was seeking Abraham's injury, his hurt, his harm. It came from one who loved him, and from one for whom he had the greatest of affection. It reminds us that sometimes The suggestion to follow a course that's contrary to God's way may come from those who are closest to us, those who are not our enemy. But it also cautions us regarding the suggestions that we make to others, and especially those who are close to us. Think of Sarah here suggesting this to Abraham. She's putting pressure on him to do this. But this is not in the best interest of Abraham. This will not benefit him, nor will it benefit herself. And surely that should speak to us, that when we make suggestions to others, when we make proposals to others, that we should always consider whether we are suggesting to them to act in a way that is contrary to God's will. Because such unscriptural suggestions will only bring heartache. As for Sarah herself, we've already observed her impatience in this matter. She was growing tired waiting. It's almost as if she'd given up hope that she would have a son, and so she suggests this idea of surrogacy. Take Hagar. How we need to learn to wait on God's time instead of trying to manufacture what we think should be the fulfillment of God's plan and God's purpose. I think if there's anything we should learn here, it is the fact that God does not need us to help Him accomplish His purpose. God has a purpose. He can accomplish it by Himself. And He does not depend on us for the accomplishment of His purpose. But Sarah's suggestion brought bitter fruit. It brought pain to her own heart. Did you notice what happened whenever Hagar conceived? We read there in verse 4 that Hagar despised Sarah. Abram went in unto Hagar and she conceived, and when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress, that is Sarah, was despised in her eyes. In other words, Hagar began to look down on Sarah. She began to treat her with contempt. She began to think that she was better than her mistress, Sarah. The Lord had favored her now with a son to Abraham, and this son was going to be the heir, and Hagar begins to despise Sarah, and you can see how that is going to affect Sarah. She feels it very deeply. She's grieved and she's pained, first of all, by the thought that she has not conceived, whereas Hagar has. And secondly, she was grieved by the way that Hagar now treated her and viewed her. Remember, this Egyptian was her maid. And she's despising Sarah, treating her with contempt. This brought pain to Sarah's heart. As you read on, you can see how it led to resentment and anger. In verse 5, Sarah said unto Abram, "My wrong be upon thee. I have given my maid into thy bosom, and when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between me and thee." That's the language of resentment and anger. She's angry now. She's angry with Hagar. She's angry at the way this Egyptian is treating her. And then she turns her anger upon her husband Abraham. It's all his fault. "My wrong be upon thee. I'm in this position because of you, Abraham. Hagar's treating me like this because of you. My wrong be upon thee." And so, having been offended by Hagar, she lays the blame at the feet of her husband Abraham. So you have her grieved, and then you have resentment, and you have this anger building up, and then finally that anger spills over into cruelty and severity. Verse 6, "But Abram said unto Sarai, behold, thy maid is in thy hand, do to her as it pleaseth thee." And when Sarai dealt hardly or cruelly with her, she fled from her face. She begins to treat Hagar with great harshness and severity and cruelty. What do we learn here regarding Sarah? Well, we find an example of the great snare and indeed the great danger of anger. She was angry with Hagar. And she was angry with her husband Abraham. And I think it was also the case that she was angry with God himself. I think you get a hint of that in verse 2. Behold now, the Lord hath restrained me from bearing. And I think that statement is an indication that she was angry with the Lord himself. And she's really just full of anger now. And she falls into this terrible snare. But yet, the whole situation had been suggested by her in the first place. She was the one who came to Abram and said, take Hagar and marry her and raise up children by her. She suggested it. And now that all these things have followed on and she's been despised by Hagar, she's resentful and she's angry, and she's angry with Hagar and she's angry with Abraham and she's angry with God himself. Her anger caused her to speak and to act foolishly, reminding us that when anger is upon the throne, reason is out the door, and it's neither heard nor spoken. The Bible speaks a lot about anger, and we should take time to consider what it says. The Bible says that anger resteth in the bosom of fools. It's a foolish man that allows anger to abide within his heart. When there is anger in our heart, we do well to remember God's question to Jonah. Chapter 4 and verse 4 of the prophecy of Jonah. God said, doest thou well to be angry? Doest thou well to be angry? And surely that's a question that could have been put to Sarah. Doest thou well to be angry, Sarah? Was this not your suggestion to begin with? You grew impatient. You made the suggestion to Abraham, and now that Hagar despises you, you're angry with her, and angry with Abraham, and angry with God. Doest thou well to be angry? The Bible says in Paul's letter to the Ephesians that we should not let the sun go down upon our wrath. In other words, we should not let it abide within, because it only produces bitter fruit. Bitter fruit. So you have the action of Abraham and you have the suggestion of Sarah. But notice thirdly the haughtiness of Hagar. When you look at Abraham, you find the snare of not listening to God's voice. When you look at Sarah, you find the snare of harboring anger. But when we come to Hagar, we find here the snare of pride. Some people look upon Hagar as the innocent victim in all of this. She was forced into this plan by Sarah and Abraham. And she's really just the innocent victim. But I think what we must remember is that, like all of us, Hagar had a choice. She could have refused to enter into this proposed marriage. She could have chosen to resist this evil and suffer the consequences, if there had been any consequences. But she could have chosen to resist it and to refuse it. But instead, she complied with the request. Her compliance suggests that there was an element of pride in this young woman. She perhaps inwardly desired this new elevated position that was being suggested. Here she is, she's just a maid from the land of Egypt. She doesn't have much prospects in life. But now, suddenly, all of a sudden, a proposal is brought to her that will make her the wife of Abraham, one of the wealthiest men in the East at that time. And she would be elevated to this new status. I think you can see the very strong desire that developed in the heart of this young woman. And it wasn't long before her pride was fully manifested. Because when she knew that she was expecting a child, she began to look upon Sarah with contempt, as we've seen in verse 4. When she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her eyes. She looked scornfully upon Sarah. Perhaps she insulted her because she was barren and she's boasting that her son would be the heir of Abraham. You can see the pride of Hagar. But her action brought rebuke. It brought Sarah's rebuke. And though Sarah may have acted overly harsh, yet Hagar had been the means of provocation. She treated Sarah with contempt. And the result is that she fled in verse 8. Or verse 6 rather. And when Sarah dealt hardly with her, she fled from her face. She ran away. She ran away. And that's another sign of pride. You see, pride is always cowardly. It runs away from owning up to the guilt of its own actions. It doesn't permit a person to acknowledge their own wrongdoing. Hagar would rather run away than face up to the consequences of her own actions. By taking flight, she was only manifesting the fact that her heart had been entangled with the thorns and the weeds of pride. She was a proud woman. But did you notice where her pride brought her? It brought her to a wilderness in verse 7. And the angel of the Lord found her by a fountain of water in the wilderness, by the fountain in the way to Shur, going back to Egypt. And she's in a wilderness. Barren place. And surely the emphasis here is that where pride takes hold and where pride takes root, it will always bring a wilderness. It will always bring barrenness to the heart. Her pride took her out of God's will. Verse 7 is a wonderful verse because it reveals the intervention of the Lord going in search of this young woman. But notice that when the Lord found her, he said to her in verse 9, "Return to thy mistress and submit thyself under her hands," clearly indicating that she was out of the way, that she was out of God's will. Her pride, because she was full of pride, she had provoked her mistress Sarah. She had acted wrongly, and now that Sarah responds with a rebuke, she doesn't take it lightly and she runs away. She's not going to have this. Who does Sarah think that she is? She runs away and she's brought into a wilderness. But God indicates to her that her pride has taken her out of God's will. Her pride has taken her out of God's will. And surely the Lord is saying to us, reminding us of this snare of pride. That attitude that thinks more highly of ourselves than we should. Is really consumed with our own importance. supposed sense of importance, when that attitude gets into our hearts, it brings us to a wilderness. And it brings us to a place that is clearly outside of the will of God and the place where God intends us to be. Yes, the chapter is one of failure, and we would rather it was not in the Bible, but it is in the Bible. Because the Lord is showing us in Abraham the snare of not taking time to seek the mind of God, taking decisions and actions without counsel from the Lord. And he's showing us in the case of Sarah the great snare of harboring an angry spirit within her heart. And in the case of Hagar, he's showing us what the outcome and the consequence of a proud spirit will be. It's one of failure. And the warning sounds very loudly. And yet, in the midst of it all, there's a wonderful illustration of the mercy of God to sinful men and women. We're told here in verse 7, the angel of the Lord found her by a fountain of water. The angel of the Lord is Christ. And here's a picture of Christ going out in search of this young woman. This young woman who's so proud and so full of her own importance. She won't accept any wrongdoing on her own part. And her pride is bringing her to the place of death. Here she is, she's expecting a child, and she runs away from the support and the sustenance that she's had, and she's come to this wilderness place, and she's all alone. She's really staring death in the face. And yet the Lord goes in search of her. And the Lord found her. And the Lord had mercy on her. And the Lord says, go back and submit yourself to your mistress Sarah. And I will multiply thy seed exceedingly. And I have heard thy affliction. Is it not a wonderful picture of the mercy of God? A woman running to her own ruin, and yet the Lord searches after her, and the Lord restores her, and the Lord directs her again to the right path. It's what the Lord does for sinful men. And it's what the Lord does for His people when they make wrong decisions and when they step out of the way of His will. The Lord in His mercy goes again after them and He directs them to the right way again and He has mercy upon them. A chapter of failure, yes, and we must learn from those failures. But a chapter also that highlights the mercy of God and the willingness of God to restore even when we stray from the way of God and when we step out of the path of His will. The mercy of God to sinful men. That's why we were singing earlier, who is a pardoning God like thee? Or who has grace so rich and so free? May we learn from these things today, and may we keep them in our hearts that we may not sin against the Lord. Let's turn to 400.